Great to have you along on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here. And taking a look at computers and software today with Peter Green of Infostar.com. He comes by once a month to talk with us. And I'm going to zero in a little bit today because it's the start of a new school year and we're going to be talking about computers. It's, I think, important to talk about how to keep youngsters safe online. And we're going to deal with that for sure. And also, of course, take your computer questions as we move along today. You may have some safety questions yourself when it comes to your youngsters. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. And Pete, always a pleasure. Thanks for coming by.
Always great, Larry. Thank you.
I think parents often feel like their kids may know more than they do about technology. And in many cases, I think that may be true. But does that mean parents can't keep kids safe online?
Well, you know, I think it used to be that way, but I think, you know, with how long PCs and, you know, now we got smartphones and devices, iPads and stuff like that. I think, you know, a lot of parents have, you know, caught up. Mm-hmm. But I think there's some other issues that need to be addressed in terms of trust. Mm-hmm. You know, having a good rapport with your kids. And, you know, with the young ones, probably putting the computer not in their room, but in a more public family place so that you can monitor what they're accessing. You should have discussions about what they're doing, you know, where they're going online. There are a lot of deceptive people out there that can engage people, kids, you know, young adults in chats. And I've seen this happen. And it can get real serious where, you know, someone entices a kid to go somewhere or be with someone, whether it's locally or, you know, across state lines. And we see this in the news all the time.
Yeah.
And I think, it, you know, trust is important. Working with your kids, open communications, having somebody else that they can confide in other than yourselves, because maybe they feel like, you know, there's punishment coming their way and there should be another adult involved that they could feel comfortable talking with. And then the other part is the term cyberbullying, you know, dealing with other peers of their age or maybe a grade older where they're getting pushed around and you need to be, you know, involved in their circle enough to help them, you know, work through that stuff. Because the more, you know, the kids engage the cyberbullying, the harder it gets on them. You know, they just start getting stressed out. And, you know, school enough can be tough for the kids, let alone, you know, peers picking on them.
Are there ways to see what the youngsters have been doing either in real time or after the fact?
Well, there are programs where you can actually act like, you know, I hate to say this, but you could be the big brother where you could install software on the computer that actually allows you to see them almost like a recorder and take you back through what they've accessed. You can also look at the history, you know, of where they've been, so you can, you know, look into where they've been, what they've done to a degree. You know, Facebook, real popular, but, you know, there's an age requirement for them to be on there, so there has to be consent. But there, you and I know there are ways to get around that. So there are programs that allow you to, you know, monitor them without their knowledge. And that's usually where, you know, the trust is an issue.
Yeah.
So that's kind of like the extreme part of it. But again, you know, unless you clear the history and the cache on the browser that they're using, you know, you can go back and look and see the places they visited. It doesn't necessarily tell you what they've done when they've been there. And that's where, you know, like a recording software underneath can share that information with you.
Peter Green of Infostar.com, our guest today, talking with him about computers and starting the show just by talking about ways to keep our kids safe while they are online. And you can join in, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Certainly, we're looking at computer problems of all kinds today, but just starting today by talking about youngsters. Really, I know there are a lot of benefits to keeping youngsters plugged in. Are there good websites that can help a parent keep up with new technology so they have a sense of what's current?
Well, there's actually a number of resources. I've listed them in the top 10, but we can go over some of them. There's a center, let's see, I call it right here. It's National Center for Missing and Exploited Children, which has a lot of useful information for parents because they also talk about prevention, not only just, you know, trying to find missing kids, but also how to prevent things from happening. You know, I was just at a public place and they, you know, they broadcast, hey, you know, you shouldn't be leaving your kids alone unless you feel they're of age, you know, and responsible to be left alone. You should be watching after them. So the same thing goes for, you know, when they're online, you know, you shouldn't, you know, it's an activity to them. And how long is that activity? You might want to restrict the time to it, you know, and say, you know, if you've done your homework, you can, you know, be online for an hour. And, you know, what are you planning to do with your time? You know, the other resources that I've listed, netsmarts.org, It's netsmarts.org is another good resource. And if you, you know, Google the kids online, kids safety, there are a number of resources that talk about, you know, things that I've just reiterate those things.
Right.
But I think the cyberbullying part, especially with kids being in school now and things just starting up, a new grade or brand new to kindergarten and so forth, you know, the stuff starts happening. And if you're letting your kids be online, you know, maybe the bully is still there engaging them online, and you just need to be actively engaged with your kids about that.
Peter Green of Infostar.com, our guest today, talking with him about computers, computer issues. We've taken a look a little bit at our youngsters and keeping them safe online. Just in general, are there some new hardware or software releases that we ought to be aware of, Pete?
Oh, let's see. The hard drives keep getting bigger and cheaper. That's always great. Same thing with the SSD drives. I haven't tried any new SSD drives, but I had a little trust problem with them. Some of the Apple hardware that's come out, pretty impressive. The Mac Pro that used to be this gigantic box that would either sit on your desk or, you know, underneath. And some people consider it like, you know, a boat anchor because, you know, the old IBM PCs were pretty big too. They've come out with these like little cylinders, you know, with so much horsepower. It's just amazing. And, you know, the things that we're seeing as a result of that in the movies with special effects are a direct result of the improvements in hardware and software because they're running on these fast machines.
I mean, isn't it amazing? You go to see some of the films that are out these days. You just have to, your jaw drops.
Yeah, it's all about the storytelling and how you're able to convey that, you know, vision of what the storyteller is seeing, you know, and the producer and the director bring all these things, and the film editors are, you know, just as equally as important because they're the ones that tie all these visions together to make this, you know, stuff happen, and it's great.
Oh, yeah. Yep. Yeah, absolutely. Peter Green of Infostar.com. Our guest, you can join in with your computer questions at 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@WPR.org, or you can post on my Facebook page. Just go to the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page, and we'll get you on sooner or later. Wondering about computer safety. I mean, it's so much hacking going on these days, with major companies being hacked, and you begin to wonder if, you know, you go to buy something online and you're using your own credit cards. I mean, is it safe? Not.
That's a great question, and you know, it's happened to so many large companies. that you feel like you're part of the mass numbers, and even though you're included in what happened, maybe it won't, you know, hopefully it won't affect you. I liken it to, you know, taking a flight on an airplane. You know, there are planes that crash, but, you know, the numbers are pretty small as related to the whole. And it's probably exactly the same way with, you know, using your credit card. You know, it happens to some, but, you know, for the masses in general, it's pretty safe.
Somebody wondered about, I actually called in and left a message, how can I control pop-up ads?
Well, depending upon what, well, all the browsers have a pop-up ad blocker. So as long as you, you can go into preferences and make those changes. So Google Chrome, Apple Safari, Microsoft Internet Explorer, Netscape, you know, Firefox, Mozilla, and whatever else there might be out there. There are settings and preferences for pop-up ad blockers, and there are also when a site is trying to push something to you through a pop-up, and it might be a bank where you are in your account and you go to look at your statement, and that statement doesn't necessarily come up on the same screen. It wants to come up on a different screen.
Yeah.
And your browser will ask you, you know, do you want to allow this? If you've, you know, set that pop-up blocker to just block all of those. So, because it realizes, hey, you're on a secure site and it's wanting to show you information. So you just need to read what's on the screen and you say temporarily allow this or always allow it from this website. Then you'll be able to, you know, you can control that.
Yeah, okay. That makes good sense. Tom in Burlington has a question for you. Hi, Tom. Thank you for calling.
Yeah, good morning. I have Microsoft put this Service Pack 1, Service Pack 2, and Service Pack 3 in the Windows XP program,
right?
And for security reasons. And now I wasn't able to get my Service Pack 1, so I can't get my Service Pack 2, and I can't get any sound on my machine. And I feel like I've been abandoned, and I've spent hours trying to figure this out, and they're not helping me, and it's terrible. And it's all for security reasons, supposedly. And my sound doesn't work on any of my programs, and I write music, and I can't get any sound out of this thing here.
Have you tried doing a search at all for Service Pack 1? Because there might be some alternative sites that may have that available.
They do have the alternative sites, but these people want to take over your computer. They want to put a whole bunch of stuff on there. That I don't really want on there.
Yeah, what I would probably do is I would go to like a resource like CNET.com, CNET.com, and do a search on their site for, you know, Windows Service Pack 1 and see what they come up with. And you might even look for some articles for that. I remember burning disks with Service Pack 1, 2, and 3. Just made it easier when I was going around to multiple computers. You know, you download the actual bug fixes together in one package.
Well, that so, may be, I might have to just buy. I have Service Pack 1, but I don't have 2 and 3. And then you can't get these updates you need for the sound systems because I don't think Microsoft is very good with sound or audio stuff. And
they usually left it up to a third party, but they also try to be the go-between with the hardware, so there are some drivers that do need to be installed from Microsoft.
Well, I just wonder, how can they get away with that? I mean, there's 200 million people who still have the XP, and they've abandoned everybody. There's some utility companies in cities that use XP for the water system. I mean, I don't understand that.
Well, you know, they moved forward with their operating system to Windows 7, and 7's been out for many years and is actually more stable and runs on, you know, the current hardware that's available. In fact, you can still buy hardware today that's brand new and make a choice of getting Windows 7 or Windows 8 on it. So the Windows XP operating system, they basically said that I forget the date when they were going to sunset it, which means basically they were no longer going to support it. But the message there was that they were not going to keep an old operating system up to date on new hardware because this Windows 7 worked better, and that's where they were putting all their energy in it. That's just what the way it worked out. And there are other companies that do that. You know, it's not just Microsoft. It's, you know, other larger software and hardware companies that, you know, basically say it's the end of the road. You know, Apple, for example, picked, I think it was the iPhone 5 and said, okay, we're now using the Lightning adapter. We're not using our old adapter. And I was like, yeah, that's great, because that I didn't like that old adapter. Mm-hmm. So there, you know, there are usually good things that come from moving forward. They gave plenty of warning, you know, in terms of them turning off the support for XP. You can probably get Windows 7 to run on your computer because it's, but it's a larger operating system, takes up more of the hard drive space. But, you know, I think the advantages are the software works better on 7. You know, the video is better, the video support, the networking support. It's not perfect, but, you know, it's an improvement.
Yeah. Well, I have to get rid of all my expensive stuff. I have all this expensive programs, and now they're junk.
Yeah.
I'm going to write a song about them.
Some of them do work in Windows 7. You just have to, you know, test them. But I would be pretty sure that there are some sites out there that have the service packs out there, you know, available. I would just do a little bit more research online and, you know, to look for them.
Yeah. Thank you, Tom, for calling. Good luck. I understand what he's saying. You know, it's like you got all this money invested in software, a whole bunch of software, and it's,
you know,
he says, it turns into junk when.
Yeah, on a larger scale, some of the, you know, businesses out there, like with IBM, they have they control hardware and software in the larger environments where they have mini computers, and you know, they'd say, hey, you know, we're not supporting, the hardware is archaic to us.
Yeah,
we're not supporting it. The operating system, you know, to this version, and that's it. And you might have 50, 100, 200 users on their system, and they're basically saying, you know, if it craps out, you know, you need to move on and make a different choice.
Peter Green of Infostar.com, our guest today. I'm Larry Mueller. Jason Butler, our on-air producer on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Right now, though, we're talking about keeping your computer running smoothly with Peter Green of Infostar.com. Join in at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org. We'd love to hear from you. Let's go to Pat in Colgate next. Hi, Pat. Thank you for calling.
You're welcome, and thank you for taking my call. I have a question about the battery in a laptop. So in the conversation yesterday about computers with some friends, someone told me that if you keep your laptop plugged in all the time while you're working, that will kill your battery faster. That will shorten the life of your battery. Do you know anything about that?
Well, it depends on, you know, the age of the laptop in terms of the battery technology. But what happens when you plug it in, you're bypassing the battery. Mm-hmm. You know that whole thing there is fine. It's that if you never use your laptop with the battery and run it down, you know, it's almost like you need to engage it with the battery alone so that you're actually using it that way. Because I've experienced this with one of my Apple MacBook Pros, and even with, you know, current technology, let's say within the last 5 years, if you don't run it on the battery and let it work that way, eventually the battery just kind of loses it and doesn't keep the charge for very long. So, you know, using it on a regular basis, having it plugged in is just fine. But you should run it off the battery and, you know, take it down to, you know, maybe 30-40%, and then, you know, plug it back in, and you'll get more life out of your battery. But, you know, just bypassing it and using it that way all the time is fine. Like I said, you just need to engage using the battery periodically, because otherwise it's ignoring the battery. The hardware knows that when you're directly plugged in, the battery is off. It's not being used.
Mm-hmm. There you go.
Okay.
Thanks,
Matt.
Thank
you very much.
Yeah, appreciate the call. Carl in Mexico. Hi, Carl.
Yeah, a question for you is Gmail, mm-hmm. Online email is working for me great. But how do you get rid of an out-of-date contact and email in your list? I haven't found anybody that's hardcore into it that knows.
So I haven't really deleted anybody from my contacts, but you should be able to go into the contacts. And have you tried anything like right mouse clicking on the contact to see if, you know, it asks you if you want to delete?
I haven't found what method. I have been trying. I haven't found it.
Yeah, the
it
other
might
thing
be
would
so
maybe
obvious that I'm not finding it.
Yeah, the other thing was maybe being click on it, and so it's highlighted and drag it into, you know, whether or not you're in a Mac or you know, just like throwing it away.
Are you in a Mac?
No.
Okay.
I'm on a PC.
Or
okay.
Windows, but either way, you know, to just like you're throwing it.
I don't use Windows, but it's regardless of the operating system.
Yeah, right. Because it's just online. I would think there's a way in the Gmail to delete contacts. I've never done it. I've usually
added
them.
There's got to be a way.
Carl, stay listening, because I bet you somebody's going to call in and say, oh, yeah, I know how to do that.
You know, the other thing is what's useful is going to a place like YouTube and, you know, just seeing if someone's got a video on how to manage Gmail, including, you know, deleting contacts. And I'm sure you'll find
well,
something.
I've seen a lot of those videos and stuff, but not this particular question.
Well, it's on my Mac, I don't know, I have no trouble deleting people. I have to delete people a lot because I
usually highlight
them. And they're gone, you know, advisees of mine, and I want to change it, and it's pretty easy to do. You just click on it.
Highlight and hit the delete key.
Yeah. That's it.
Yeah.
That's all it is. Or you can highlight, and there's a plus key, which is edit. It's an edit key, and you hit the edit key, and then you just eliminate it.
Mm-hmm.
Just delete it.
Yeah. It should be as simple as that.
Yeah,
it
should be.
It's pretty common.
Apparently, Carl's saying it's not.
It'll probably ask you.
That's the problem. It should be that easy.
It'll probably ask you if you're sure. You know,
ask if you're sure, yeah. Well, I'll tell you what, Carl. Somebody's going to call before the show's over. So just stay listening. I'm pretty sure of it. You wait. There'll be somebody that knows how to delete an old contact in Gmail. You know how to do that, call us at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Or if you have another question, you can do that too. John in Mequon has a question. Hi, John.
Good morning, Larry. Good morning, Peter. Thank you both for having this monthly program. I appreciate being able to come on. I've got a very elementary question, and that is moving from a corporate computer where I did my personal communication, banking, and bill paying on, which had great security. Now I'm kind of naked with my own personal computer. I have a Norton courtesy security, and so I'm looking for the optimal security, Peter. Do I go with a Norton or a McAfee or something else, and I'm going to get the same level of security? I know your website, you have some links to some free security, but I really want something strong because of the fears that we have. I mean, when you do your banking and your bill paying with a credit card or bank number, my God, that is that's golden information for some thief.
Yeah. There are the number of free programs that are listed out there, like AVG, Avast, and I think House. I don't remember all the names, but they usually, you know, they give you the free version to work with, and then they usually have like probably at least a couple of other products that you can upgrade to. So what you may want to do is download one of the free products, check it out, and see how, you know, if you like how it works. you know, the interface, because they're all different.
Yeah.
And if you like it, then when you want to, you can simply do an upgrade, you know, from your system with that software. It will just download a different version of it that steps you up to the next level.
Okay.
Some of the limitations with the free programs are some of the preferences you can't change. It doesn't, you know, in a network environment, it may not allow you to scan all the things that you'd like scanned. But generally, it provides really good protection for incoming and outgoing email, where it scans them. It does a scan of your entire hard drive, make sure it's, you know, free and clear. So, and then, you know, there are some malware bytes is another program that's available both free and at cost, where it may do a little bit more. You know, they all try to keep up on it, but, you know, having another one in your back pocket to work with is a good thing, too.
Yeah.
Good.
All right.
And you would think that the AVG of the Evness is as good as the McAfee or Norton?
Yeah, the AVG, Avast, and some of the other free ones out there, they're just as good, and they're popular. But Norton and McAfee, to me, have always had targets, you know, for the hackers to get into, especially with, and I don't know if this policy is still the same with some of the mass market PCs that are out there, like from Dell and HP and so forth, where those things are basically preloaded on their computers and you go, okay, sure, I'll buy into this. So, you know, and they put out millions of computers. So I think the targets are a lot bigger and brighter for the hackers for those two.
Yep. There you
Thank you so much for your help.
Yep. Thanks, Good Sean. Luck. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Peter Green of Infostar.com, our guest today, Larry Mueller here. Thank you so much for joining in. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Tom and Nelson, thank you for calling. Hi. Yeah.
Oh, hello, guys.
Hi.
Appreciate it. Yeah, I've got an old HP D51S, and I want to upgrade my RAM from 500 meg to 2 gig.
Okay.
I've got the cards. I know how to put them in. I've just read that the BIOS might not work, or I might have to upgrade BIOS or do this or do that. And if I slip the new cards in, does the computer suddenly, boom, everything not work, or do I run a risk of something going catastrophically wrong?
Well, a couple of things. One is you can go to HP's site and type in their that computer model, and it will give you the information and tell you what it was shipped with in terms of the BIOS and what it supports. So you should be able to get that. So you should be able to get that information from them.
And somebody's saying right now, what is BIOS?
BIOS is the instructions that are written on the it's the firmware operating system for the hardware of the computer. So it's in a chip on the actual board that says
on the motherboard, isn't it?
Yeah, so it says this is how much memory I can access. These are the different hard drives. These are the interfaces. This is the keyboard and so forth. So it's just some really important basic instructions so that the hardware knows how to talk to each other.
Right.
So aside from checking, you know, the website to look and see about the model number and what's supported, which is a good idea, you could also go to some of the memory resources out there like Kingston and Crucial, and they would probably tell you as well, you know, what your model would support. Because they're out there to sell memory, so they want to make sure it works. So that's another way to check that. And then the other thing is, you know, if you know you got the right memory sticks, you know, shut it down, unplug it, you know, work in your socks, don't work in shoes, and always touch the power supply to dissipate the static electricity. And then just make note of how I take pictures, you know, because even though I'm good at it, or I think I'm good at it, I still like to take pictures of how things are arranged before I got my hands in there.
Yep.
And with these smartphones, that's pretty easy to do if you have one. And then you plug them in. If the computer sees all that memory, it's going to count it up when you restart it. But to eliminate the mystery of yes or no, you know, it's either go to the manufacturer's website or go to some of those other resources, and you'll probably get a good answer.
I've already gone out on the HP site, and I know they listed a bunch of BIOS upgrades out there.
Mm-hmm.
But should I download that to my C drive first? And then if there is a problem, then go on and...
I would just look and see what you have for your BIOS and see if it's, you know, what are you getting for those upgrades? Because it may be more trouble than it's worth.
Okay.
So see what your computer has for the BIOS and see what changes were made with the upgrades and whether or not it really is necessary. Because that's that's a little bit more dicey and tricky to do, you know, and if you interrupt it, you risk that your computer may not work because you ruined reburning that chip.
Yeah,
that's comforting.
So it's basically saying is it worth the trouble? What changes did they make based on what I have and what they did? Is it really necessary?
There you go, Tom. Thanks a lot for calling.
All right.
Yep.
Good luck.
Yep. Appreciate the call. And John in McFarland. Hello. Thanks for calling.
Thanks, Larry. Peter, I've got a question for you. I recently bought a new laptop, and it came with Windows 8. And previously, I've always been able to manage to adapt to a newer version of Windows. But Windows 8 is really driving me nuts.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm wondering, is there a way, without, you know, selling everything I own, to get Windows 7 on a brand new laptop that still has Windows 8 on it?
So are you having trouble with using the interface and how it does things?
Yes, I am.
Yeah. So, well, you got two options. Windows 8.1 has addressed that with, you know, the old interface. Or you can download what's called the Classic Shell. I've got links on my website for it. Where you can just simply download it, and it allows you to choose, you know, the Windows 7 interface, and yet Windows 8 is still there.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's the best way.
Yeah, so, you know, if you don't go to 8.1, or you choose to use a third party instead of Microsoft's way of doing it.
I'd go to 8.1 myself.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure they fixed some things when they went to A1, which is the interface needed.
That's one reason to go there, right?
Yeah.
Because there are other things they fixed.
And if you don't like that, you can still download the Classic Shell, and it'll still work, too. So you can...
That Classic Shell download free?
Yep. It's a free download.
Is the A1 free, too?
Say that again?
Is A1 free?
A1 should be free. Yeah, it's like a, you know, one of their service packs, but they decided to call it 8.1.
Thank you, guys.
Yep. Yeah, thanks a lot for calling, John.
I feel your pain. I've been with it with 8, and I was like, why did they do this? You know, why did they do this?
And the nice thing about the change is that the 8.1 is that it's free.
Yeah, and at least they listened.
Yeah.
You know, they heard enough of it.
Yeah.
So they made change.
Sherry in St. Germain, hello.
Hi there.
Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Well, we have been going through, we're in the middle of nowhere where, so we have a jetpack through Verizon, and we started out using 10 gigabytes of data per month, and that was very satisfactory. Last month, we were up to 21 gigabytes, and our habits really haven't changed a whole lot. So how, and even the computer techs that I have talked to online have said, well, that would be a lot of data for you. He says, I would use that much, but he says, I'm surprised that you would be using that much. So
how many children do you have at home?
None.
Okay. That was my first thought.
What are you primarily using it for? Are you tapping in?
We have our phones hooked up to it, but that uses very little. It's our laptops that use the majority of it.
Mm-hmm. Are you tapped into, like, Netflix with it?
No. See, this is what we can't understand. Mm-hmm. We go on and check our email. My husband reads the Milwaukee Journal online in the morning. We check our email through Yahoo. We both probably go on Facebook and maybe see a couple little videos on Facebook, you know, 2-3 minute videos.
Right.
Sometimes I download audiobooks, but that would be once a month maybe.
So what kind of setup do you have in your house in terms of bringing the internet in? Is it...
Well, it's called a jetpack is what we have, and it's just, you know, a little thing that's connected, so...
So is it it's a wireless router? So is it a little box and all your laptops connect wirelessly to it?
Two laptops.
It's a wireless... It's a MiFi, that's what my...
Okay. Do you have... Is it secure? In other words...
Yeah.
So it's password protected and secure?
Correct, yeah.
Okay.
So nobody can be going on and using it.
Yeah, we
the next door neighbors
to two sides, and our other neighbors have their own, and other neighbors are 500 yards away.
Mm-hmm. Well, what I would do is probably, you know, from the beginning of one of your billing cycles, is have a little notepad next to each laptop, and just, you know, track your do a diary and just track your usage over the month in terms of what are you doing, and you know, seeing if anything could be suspect in terms of how much is being used. Because if your usage is growing and you're really doing routine things that aren't, you know, really shouldn't be consuming that much bandwidth, you might want to, what do you have on your system for, you know, like antivirus or...
I have
malware.
Microsoft Security Essentials. My husband uses McAfee.
Okay. The Security Essentials, I'd probably change to one of the others like Avast or AVG. Security Essentials may not be doing enough. And you may want to see what scans come up with after you, you know, download some of the other tools to see if there's something going on in the background. Do you notice your computer's getting slow at all?
I haven't noticed that, but there are other people that tell me, oh, does that take a long time to boot up or whatever?
Yeah. So you might want to, like I said, use another tool other than Microsoft Security Essentials and see if there's some chatter going on that you're not aware of.
That's,
you know, from your system.
Good idea. That's a very good idea.
Yeah. And McAfee needs to be kept up to date. If it's not, I would question the same thing with that one as well.
Now, somebody had said something at some point in time about a bug in the browser that could use data without our knowing it.
Yeah, that would be not so much a bug as some malware that's there doing something on your system. Yeah, so I would do that and have your check your laptops with some other software, you know, like I said, AVG or Avast. McAfee might not, as long as you keep it up to date, McAfee is okay. But there are people that let it expire and they have it on their system, they think it's still working, but it really isn't doing, you know, the necessary things for you to be kept up to date. The other thing is just being aware that, you know, in terms of data usage, downloading music or streaming music, you know, sharing photos, you know, downloading or streaming video, those are all large consumers of bandwidth. Email is just simply text flying back and forth, and it's typically very small unless, again, you're adding, you know, big attachments. So I think the important thing here is, one, is getting your system with some better protection, making sure you're doing full scans on your husband's system, and also keeping a diary of what your usage is and see if there might be something, oh, I forgot about that, and that might be the thing that's, you know, consuming the data.
So some things for you to do, and thanks a lot for calling, Sherry. Appreciate your call very much.
But I do know where St. Germain is. It's not nowhere. Or in the middle of nowhere.
No, it's not in the middle of nowhere.
You can't hide.
Hi, Sherry. Yeah, bye-bye. Peter Green of InfoStar.com. Our guest, I'm Larry Wheeler here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Great to have you listening in on the Ideas Network as we visit with Peter Green of InfoStar.com about your computer. Give us a call at 800-642-1234. Evie in Minocqua has a comment next. Hi, Evie. Thank you for calling.
Thanks for having me. Yes, I wanted to make a comment on the Windows XP compatibility issue. Microsoft does offer an option with Windows 7 to have a virtual machine running, so you could run Windows XP within Windows 7, so you could run your old software, which is no longer compatible with the new operating system. There's also another option from VMware, which allows you, again, to run any operating system inside Windows. And I believe there's also some other options which are free. VMware is not free. So there's lots of options out there for people who have software that only runs on XP.
Hmm. All right.
Yep. Good comment.
Yeah, good comment. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it.
I've tried some, and occasionally you do have problems. It's not perfect, but it is a good option to try.
Ron in La Crosse up next. Hey, Ron.
Yes, I'm glad that caller just called now. I was wondering, I have an old laptop. It is Windows XP. It's a Hewlett Packard. They bought out Compact. And I talked with some computer techs in a shop here in La Crosse, and they said, you could upgrade from Windows XP to Windows 7, but your hard drive wouldn't leave much space on your hard drive. I just wonder if you could connect my old laptop to an external hard drive, like, the hardware they used to have back in the 80s and 90s. With one of the USB cords or jacks, and then maybe I'd have enough hard drive space to upgrade to Windows 7, or, as the previous caller said, just have an adapter software between XP and Windows 7. Because right now the hard drive on my little notebook is doesn't have much room for anything but a Windows 7 operating system.
Right. You could set it up on your internal drive and then access, 7, the data on your external drive. I believe during the install, if you don't have enough room, it's not going to install on your hard drive. So do you know how large the hard drive is on your laptop?
Oh, geez, I'll have to look.
How old is it?
Oh, I bought it used. I suppose you call it the gray market, and that was back in March of 2011.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it might be around 2007 they came out with this one. But I'm just going to check the bottom here, and what I see here is, I'd have to open the battery compartment or something. Yeah. I don't see it on the back here.
Well, what you can do in Windows is using Windows Explorer, right mouse click on your C drive and click on properties, and it'll tell you how much space you have out there and how much is being used, and, what's available or what's free.
I got a Mac now, and that's what I usually use anyway. But
It really should be on the primary drive of a system, and you could, like I said, you can use an external drive to access your data. And you might want to get the external drive to, if you were going to make a change on the laptop, is move your data to that external drive so at least you've got a copy of it before you make the upgrade.
Yeah, should do that. Good luck, Ron. Thank you for calling. Appreciate it. We have an email from JH wonders if you know of a number keypad that works well with a MacBook Pro.
A numeric keypad. I would probably just, Google search that. There are numbers Kensington.
Kensington.
And Logitech and some other accessory manufacturers make those products. And Apple might even have one themselves. But I would search for that and then see what the reviews are, because some of the reviews might shed some light on issues or problems or some really good things about it. And that's where you get your best information, is people that have written reviews to let you know what's going on.
Jude in Ellison Bay. Hi, thanks for calling.
Good morning.
Hi. Morning.
Simple question, I hope. I was formerly on an Outlook Express system and switched over to Gmail for various reasons. When I try to email photographs to people, on Outlook Express, you can downsize them so that when you send them, you're not sending out 3 billion megabytes, and the receiver can open them easily. I've not been able to find a place on Gmail to do that. And so when I email a photograph on Gmail, it goes so huge that some people can't open them. That's my question. How do I downsize?
I'm trying to remember where I saw that. I thought you can size when you're going to send something, whether you're sending a small, medium, or large.
Right.
That should pop up when you go to send. It doesn't pop up when you go to send?
No, it doesn't.
A box should pop up.
I wonder if there's something in preferences.
Yeah.
Because I just remember that with sending stuff by Gmail.
On Gmail?
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a pop-up box.
Yeah.
And I bet you're right. I bet you there's something in preferences.
The other way to do it manually is, it sounds like using a Windows system, correct?
Yes, Windows 7.
Yeah, you could probably, click on the picture and it'll preview it for you. And then there's on the top right, you can choose to open with whatever, image software you have on your machine. So one of them might be Paint. And then you could just resize the photo that way. Or there might be, Microsoft Photo Gallery or so. They're just whatever program you got on your machine, it's going to have that in the options for you to open it with.
The photo programs.
Yeah. So when you use Windows Explorer, go to where the pictures are, click on one of them, and it'll preview for you. And then I believe on the top right it says open. And then when you click on that, it'll give you the option of which program to open it with and then resize it that way. But I remember seeing
the easy way would be to have that pop-up box.
That's not been popping up for me, and I've found very few tools to help me on Gmail.
So when you click on it as an attachment, it doesn't ask you do you want to send it small, medium, or large? Because I just really remember it being that way.
Okay. I have not found it, but I will try your ideas here.
Okay.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for calling.
Yeah, appreciate the call. Melissa in Eau Claire. Hi, thanks for calling.
Hi, thank you so much for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
I have had a problem with, I purchased a Toshiba laptop in February of 2013. And I used the computer for, approximately 6 weeks. And long story short, the computer did not get used again for about a year and some months. Didn't get turned on or anything. So now when I've actually gone now to use the computer again, and when I turn it on, it just says BIOS password, BIOS.
Right.
And I'm very confused. I don't know what this is. I've had people tell me that my computer is garbage now, and help, I don't know what to do with it.
Well, I haven't experienced that in terms of needing a password, not knowing it with a BIOS, but a couple of suggestions. One is going to the manufacturer's website and, asking the question, BIOS password, and see what comes up and read through those. If they have a tech support line, call them. Sometimes they have like a backdoor way of resetting it. And it may be just simply a combination of keys that when you reboot the computer that allows you to just, reset it. But they don't publicly put it out there and, unless someone's calling for it. The other thing is going, I have on my, on my InfoStar page, if you go to the Virus Info Center at the very top, there's a Google search that searches through all my tech links that I've put in there. And you might want to try searching that way as well. You could do a Google search for it too, but I just kind of narrow it down to a lot of the computer resources and user groups that are out there, and there might be an answer for you. But make sure you have your model number, information from underneath the computer available because they change. Sometimes they, even with the same number, there might be like a dash letter or number that's pertinent to which one that you have. So
it's not a complete loss yet.
I wouldn't say it's a complete loss
yet. No.
Okay.
You can give it to me and I'll try it and I'll keep it. It's, you know, if you're going to throw it away.
Okay.
It's one of those that where you find it, you find the junk pile, and somebody's junk is somebody else's, you know.
Treasure.
You got
treasure,
it.
Treasure, right.
Yeah. So.
Thank you so much.
Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. Oh, man. Nick in Green Bay. Hi. Thanks for calling.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm so stressed out because I'm an idiot. But I offered my daughter's kindergarten teacher a computer. And it used to be my ham computer, but I'm not into ham radio anymore. So this weekend I thought it'd be smart, you know, just wipe it and put Windows XP back on. Well, it keeps crashing. I'm so frustrated. So anyways, I was listening to your show, and I heard the other guy talk about Windows 7. Now, what type of resources do you need? Because the computer I got is a Dell Dimension 4700. I don't know the specs on the hard drive, but it's at least a couple gigs. Will that run Windows 7? Or?
Well, if you go to the Dell website and put in that model number, it should come up with you know, the information, the details that you need to know.
Oh, yeah, I know the details. I'm at work, so I don't know the details right offhand to tell you.
Sure.
But I'm wondering if that computer will run Windows 7. And the other question I got for you is, it's not meant for Windows 7, so how hard is it going to be to find drivers for video and audio and everything else?
Yeah, that's the thing that I was going to say that you have to do, is you have to go out there and look for those drivers.
We need to take a break here to take a look at the news, weather, find out what else is in store for us here on the IdeasNet. And then we will be back with Pete, and we'll talk about the issue we just discussed and more. Stay with us. Sometimes technology gets a bad rap. Like so many things, when it works well, we don't really take note. But when it isn't, we certainly notice then. Hi, Larry Mueller here. Great to have you along today on the Ideas Network. Peter Green is an independent computer consultant, and he's happy to help you with your computer problems. With me in the studio today, and Peter, thanks again for spending time with us.
My pleasure, Larry.
Really appreciate it. At this time of the program, we usually go through a top 10 list.
Yep.
And today is no exception.
Yeah. You know, as related to the last caller, I think the most important thing when you're planning to make a change in the operating system is that, you know, the words they use, do your due diligence, make sure you're prepared. Being prepared is the most important thing in going through an operating system update or change, is that, you know, drivers are the most important thing in talking to all the devices in your computer. So moving forward, make sure you've identified what those devices are in your system, or the specifications, and then securing the devices. So if you're changing from XP to Windows 7, you have those in hand so that when the upgrade requests those, you have them and they can be installed at the time that they need to be. And then it should go smoothly. All right, so the top 10, if you go to infostar.com and go on the top left side, you'll see either current or the top 10 archives, and you can scroll down to today's date and they're all there. The thing here today about the top 10 is it's number 200, Larry.
Oh,
so if you do the math on that, that's it's back and goes back to the 90s.
Oh,
so,
my gosh.
They're all there. I haven't clicked back on one to see how many of them are still active. But, you know, I think a lot of them are, you know, probably the hit rate on all of them is probably pretty good. All right. So the first one is called Family Life, and it's a web resource to share advice on different family lifestyles, so pre-marriage, newlyweds, and with kids. And I don't know if it's got more than that. I didn't really get into it too deeply, but it looked like a really good resource. Bestappsite.com is a good place to find apps for Apple's iDevices, and there are reviews there. Sometimes it's important to know what your IP address and what is your IP internet protocol. It's your address when you're online. And there's a website called whatismyipaddress.com. For doing cabling and all the different cable types that are out there, there's a place that sells cables. It's called cableorganizer.com. But so, it's got some really good useful info about the various types of cables that are out there and specifications, installation tips, including videos and articles on it. Because they sell the product, but they want you to use it.
Yeah.
And if you're happy with using it, maybe you'll buy some more or recommend them. I haven't bought anything from them, but I'm just saying it's got some good stuff there. If you're looking for a place for recipes and nutrition information, This is a supplement to their print magazine. It's called cookinglight.com. And then I just noticed I have a little error in this website because I put a period before it, but it's called cdc.gov. And I think with the recent Ebola outbreak, it's a good resource to check for additional info. Nationally as well as, you know, there might be some local resources available through them. This next one is a fantasy football source for cheat sheets and rankings. I just love that, cheat sheets. It's called fftoolbox.com. So this is the season for it.
Right in the midst of it right now.
Yep. This next one claims that they have 343,342 adoptable pets from over 13,117 adoption groups available, and it's called PetFinder.com. So instead of going out there, you know, buying a pet, maybe you might want to look into adopting one. The name of this is interesting: GoodCarBadCar.net. But what they claim is a passionate tracking of auto sales. So it breaks down auto sales in a wide variety of categories. And then the resource I talked about earlier, NetSmarts, NetSmarts.org, is a program of the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children, and lots of great info there.
So really lots of good ones again.
Always, yep.
And 200.
Yeah, 200. So 200 times 10, that's
a
bunch of web links will keep you busy if you want to go through all of them.
That is for sure. We have Donna from Bailey's Harbor with a question for you. So let's go to her. Donna, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hello.
Hi.
I have about a 4 or 5 year old Dell laptop running Vista, and nobody's used it for, I don't know, 6 or 8 months, and somehow the password has been lost. I can't get into it. I couldn't get into admin using F1, so I'd like to access some records in there, but I can't get it to open.
Okay. There are some resources out there to allow you to reset the password. You might have to burn a CD. I'm trying to think if there's any resources out there for just downloading. I've always used a CD and rebooted the computer, and then it just asks you, you know, if you want to reset the password, and it basically turns it into, you know, nothing so you can get onto it.
Mm-hmm.
If you go to infostar.com and the Virus Info Center page, I believe, I'm going to look it up real quick.
It's there.
Yeah, it is there. If you go to, yeah, here it is. If you go down, there's a bunch of links I put next to security utilities.
Okay.
And then emergency utilities. So there's a password editor. I'm not sure if that's the one that'll do it. Emergency utilities, there's ERUNT, E-R-U-N-T. There's EBCD. So if you go through those links, or if you were to do a Google search and say, you know, reset password for Vista, you'll probably find some resources out there. But it'll probably come down to having to burn a CD with that software, because what it does in some of these cases, how I've used it, it reboots it, but with another operating system.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
To temporarily do this maneuver to fix the password.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, I will try that. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Yeah. Thanks,
so your
Don.
Computer is still good. You can still you can get back in.
We hope. Yeah. At least you'll be able to get back in.
Right.
Joanne in Menominee. Hi. Thank you for calling.
I'm in Menominee Falls, but that's okay. I've been really frustrated with the updates with the Windows 8. In regards to, I have a program called Meet years ago. Had it for a long time. They've always told me when they wanted it updated, so I've updated it. Recently, they wanted me to update. I was going from their 5.4 program to their 5.5. They blocked me totally from the program. I could not access it. And have you heard that?
They what? I'm sorry?
Have you ever heard about something like that before? How can they do that to you when you own the program and have purchased it? They totally block me. They give you a Windows that says either update now and continue or exit the program. And then I want to know if there's any way that you can tell me how to get rid of, like, when I have to update Java or Adobe, all the extra add-ons, all the extra, you know, coupon saver, weather, this, and all those other extra crappy programs I don't want.
Right. Well, the neat program that you're talking about, you're saying they're blocking you?
Yeah, they totally blocked me. I upgraded in January to their 5.4 program,
okay,
which they usually email me and say, get the newest upgrade, whatever.
Right.
This time they totally blocked me and said, the Windows came up and said, you have two choices. You either exit the program or you update now.
Hmm. Yeah, I haven't seen that before.
No.
So Neat is a program that you like to use, I take it.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
What you may want to do is email them and saying you're having difficulties with Windows 8. Can they email you a link to a download where you can download the software and, you know, put it on your system to get it upgraded?
Called their 1-800 number,
okay,
which I prefer to do because I find that more accessible, and I know it's the 1-800 number I've used before.
Okay.
Because I'm getting really leery of what's going on the internet and what you're clicking into,
right,
going to places that shouldn't be.
Mm-hmm.
And I asked them. I said, "Hey, you know, listen. I've had good access with you guys before. No problems. What's going on? How come you're blocking me now?" And they said, because they want to update the whole system, everybody. I said, you know, this isn't really fair and stuff. But they did end up giving me to a supervisor, and they said, yes, okay, fine. That they upgraded me to the 5.5 automatically then.
Hmm. And they did?
Yeah, they did, and it's downloaded. I've checked. It is from the Neat company itself.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And I have been able to access it, and yes, it is completely different in format than what it used to be.
Okay.
So, yes, I understand that they did upgrade their system, but it just bothers me that they all of a sudden absolutely blocked me from my program. I could not, I told them, I said, if I had a tax auditor come to my house today, I would not be able to access any of my receipts that I scanned.
Hmm. Well, it sounds like there might be a certificate issue that Windows is having a problem dealing with, and they're basically, you know, blocking that for what they think might be security reasons. So, you know, it might be Windows is the culprit in this case.
Yeah,
you may need a check in the in your browser, because you're doing this online. There might be some security settings in your browser that are interfering with you interacting with the Neat software. As far as the other updates, you know, with Java, JavaScript, and so forth, Adobe, Flash, anytime a new device comes out or if there's a bug fix, they're going to throw out the entire, you know, they throw it out there. They put it out there for the users to get notified that there's a new version of it. If you're not really doing much with it, and you don't want to stay current, you don't have to, so you just decline.
Yeah.
You know, that's the easiest way to do it. I would not recommend blocking them because at some point in time it might be necessary to do an upgrade. But it's typically any time they come out with a new device or they find a bug fix, that's when they put it out there. So, you know, if the iPhone 6 is coming out in 60 days, you can be sure that they're going to, you know, Adobe's going to be pushing out updates on the software.
Good luck, Joanne. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. You can join in, too, by the way, at 1-800-642-1234. We'll get you on pretty quickly, actually, so give us a call. We had an email from Sarah who says, my 7-year-old really caught me off guard with Minecraft. He loves it, a 7-year-old. He's navigated to teen pages that are in the sidebar that use some really bad language. This is a friendly reminder to parents who have the pocket edition on the iPad or even the desktop that kids can pick up on things very quickly.
I have no issue with Minecraft, but it was much easier than I realized for my child to end up in unfiltered territory, the unfiltered, unscreened situation on the iPad.
Yeah. You know, Minecraft, Warcraft.
What is Minecraft anyway?
It's an online games.
Game.
You know, EverQuest used to be a real popular one. Was it Doom? You know, where you have different worlds, you're an avatar. I don't know if you remember this, Larry, but before all this stuff got popular, there was a world out there with just, you know, a free world where you could go out there and, you know, pick the avatar. You walk through a gallery, pick who you wanted to be, and then you'd just be out there, you know, and, you know, in space. But now the games are interactive. There are monsters. There are battles. There are ways to value of things. Sometimes things are sold on eBay, you know, to give you more power, and trading, and, you know, what cloaking devices or whatever it might be. So, and they're basically, you know, each person is a user of the system and they're interacting. And like she said, you know, unfiltered, you know, dialogue and stuff like that. That's part of, you know, being online in these worlds and these games, immersed in that, is, you know, people are actually communicating. And it's not just, you know, it's a 7-year-old now with maybe, you know, a 40-year-old, and all of a sudden they can tell by the chatter that this is coming from someone that's younger than 10. That's where you got to get involved with setting limits, not being okay with something, and talking about why you're not old enough, you know, to be doing these things. So that's where you got to step in and set the boundaries.
Earlier in the show, we had a caller call in wanting to know how to delete a contact in Gmail. Mm-hmm. We didn't have a quick answer, and I said, you know what, somebody's going to call in and we'll have an answer. And sure enough, actually not a call, but a Facebook note from my Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show, from Lance, to how to delete a contact in Gmail. So to do that, I hope that earlier caller is still listening. Click on the name so the panel for the contact's information opens. There is a little box above that says More. And the delete is under that.
Yeah.
So I just go to delete contact in Gmail. Click on the name so the panel for the contact's information opens. And when that happens, there's a little box that says More, and delete is under that. Mm. And so that's pretty straightforward.
Yep.
Pretty straightforward. Pat in Duluth, Minnesota, your turn. Hi, Pat.
Hi. Hi. I feel like a dinosaur with my question, but I have a Mac computer, and it'll be 3 years old in February. And the only thing I use that for is photographs. I'm doing some macro photography, very amateur, but so I've got those stored on there. 12 days ago, I saw a little sign come up and say that Time Machine is no longer backing up. And when I clicked on a window, it said delayed. And when I bought the computer, I also bought an external little machine to also back up. So that's outside of the computer.
Okay.
And I keep that on.
Mm-hmm.
My question is, first of all, what does this mean? And also, even though I don't really know what Time Machine does or is, but even if that's not backing up, is my external little, I'm going to call it a drive, I don't know, that little external machine, is that backing up my photographs?
Well, the way Time Machine works is that it needs to be backing up to the external drive. So it claims that drive for that space to use it that way.
Okay.
So one thing you need to look at is maybe using Finder and go to the external hard drive and see if you can access that, because it should come up as an attached drive. So that's one. Number two, if it's attached and you can access it, you know, look and see if you can find out the info on that drive, if it's actually full, and that's why Time Machine might not be backing up, because it's continually making copies of your system.
Okay.
So that's, you know, Time Machine is going back in time and recovering files. So you could actually go to a Time Machine backup from 3 years ago and maybe only had 10 photos in that folder. That's all it's going to show you.
Okay.
It's not going to show you, you know, the thousands of pictures you have now in that same folder because it just made that backup for that date 3 years ago. So you need to look, number one, the critical thing is to see if you can still access that external drive with Finder. Okay. And then there might be, a preference setting or something that inadvertently got changed with using Time Machine, but it usually is. It stops working when there's not enough space.
That's kind of what I thought.
Yeah.
That there wouldn't be enough
space. You can actually delete those backups from a long time ago if they're not of any use to you. You can, you know, just go and put them in the trash and then, you know, permanently delete them. But until you put them in the trash and then say empty the trash, they're still there. The operating system still acknowledges that they're there because it's thinking, hey, you may want to recover me.
Right.
So when you really throw them away, they're going to be gone.
Okay. So I'll do what you say, go into the Finder first.
Mm-hmm.
And then if everything is, full, then I could start deleting. I have tens of thousands of pictures. I have to say that.
Yep.
Okay. And can I ask one more quick question?
Sure.
If I delete, say I'm doing a download today and I delete pictures from another download, does the external drive and Time Machine get current on that? Like, is that picture deleted then? If I put it in the trash and say delete?
Well, let's say at 10 a.m. this morning you were using the computer and you downloaded a bunch of pictures.
Okay.
And Time Machine was on and working and took a picture of your system at 11 o'clock. It's going to have everything that you had on your computer from 10 a.m. to 11.
Okay.
If you, after 11, you go, you know, I don't want that stuff, and you remove it, that Time Machine backup is still going to have everything that you did from that 10 to 11 period.
Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Because it's trying to, you know, I don't want to say foul language, it's trying to save your, you know, your butt. You know, by making a good backup for you so that, hey, maybe you really did want that you downloaded. So, and that's where things accumulate. That's how things get bloated and bigger.
There you go.
It's really cool, though, to have that, to be able to drill down to a date, you know, that, hey, I need that, and I removed it. But you can go back in time
and
just handpick it and say, I got it.
Thanks, Pat. Thanks for calling. In 30 seconds, how do we? Where do you find reconditioned computers?
Where do you find reconditioned computers? Probably, good reconditioned computers here locally. You know, the UW stores sells computers, so you may want to go online and check and see what they have available. And there are some local computer shops that probably maybe take some trade-ins or have reconditioned stuff. And I know there are some local stores that do that as well. Yeah.
Pete, always a pleasure. Thank you so much. You'll come back and be with us again, I hope.
Yep, absolutely.
Peter Green of Infostar.com, our guest. He'll be back and we'll talk with him again. And tomorrow we talk with Scott Craven, our wildlife ecologist, talk about the results of a statewide social survey on attitudes toward wolves. Stay with us.